are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
It's Friday. It's the weekend, baby.
I work every other weekend, so that doesn't really do anything for me, buddy. We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm doing great. In fact, I got the opposite problem. I get the summers off, so every day's Friday.
Well, see, that's some good stuff right there.
I hate this guy already.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
You know, the A's just kind of, they baffle me. There's kind of like a huge Etch-a-Sketch, you know, where, you know, you kind of draw bridges to nowhere and nothing seems to happen.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Eli Rosenzweig. Eli, how you doing?
Dandy, what about you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's Friday. It's the weekend, baby.
I work every other weekend, so that doesn't really do anything for me, buddy. This is my weekend on, so I'm not exactly excited about Friday.
Well, I'm sorry. Your life is sad.
Yeah, I won't argue that fact.
Joining us today is a special guest. Hopefully that perks you up, Eli. We've got Scott Barzilla from The Fantasy Fix. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great. In fact, I got the opposite problem. I get the summers off, so every day's Friday.
Well, see, that's some good stuff right there.
I hate this guy already.
Scott, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and what you do over at The Fantasy Fix and then where people can reach you on social media?
You can reach me on Twitter at sbarzilla, and you know, you can reach me through the site as well. We're right at thefantasyfix.com, and you know, moonlight for a couple of other sites here and there, mainly baseballreflections.com.
Nice. Well, we're glad you were able to join us for this episode, and let's jump in and talk about a couple players, and start with George Springer. Springer has had a pretty good season to date. But he stole his first two bases of the season the other night. So I'll start with you, Scott. Is George Springer's value going to go up in the second half if he starts to steal?
I think it would, but I don't see him actually stealing that many bases. I mean, he's been up four seasons now, and it's just really hasn't been much part of his game. And I think they put him on top of the order for his OBP more so than his speed.
All right. Eli, what are your thoughts on Springer rest of the way?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's going to steal that much in the second half. And also, his success rate in his career has been pretty poor. I know he was a big-time guy in the minors, but that's just not his game anymore. And, you know, even if the steals go up, maybe the homers go down. I mean, he had 29 last year in 162 games, and now he's on pace for 47. I mean, that power is legit. He could do that. But maybe the RBIs go down, maybe the runs go down. He's, you know, getting a little lucky in both departments. His homer to fly ball rate is up 10% this year. So some of those could drop while the steals go up. So I think his value will pretty much stay the same, even if he starts stealing bases.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. And I would expect the average to come down quite a bit as well. He's almost hitting 300 at this point. He's got a little bit of an inflated BABIP. And he's been mostly like a 260 to 270 hitter throughout his major league career. So I would expect the average to drop. I'm not going to bank on the steals. Anything he gets is gravy, especially considering, like you mentioned, Eli, he's on like a 47, 48 homer pace right now. I wouldn't expect him necessarily to do that. Where would you guys think about taking him next year? Scott, where do you think he's going to go in drafts next year?
I think he'll be a first-rounder if he continues playing as he is. And I think, you know, the big thing to follow in addition to BABIP is the contact rates. He seems to be making more contact these days. So, you know, maybe that average floats around 270, 280. I do agree 300 is a little too high for him. But, you know, if he's a guy that's going to get on base 40% of the time and hit 280 and hit 40 home runs, I mean, that's a first-round talent right there.
Eli, would you agree first-round talent in Springer?
Yeah, I mean, he's on pace for 130 runs, 47 homers, good average. I mean, he's on a great offense. So, but, you know, a lot of things, One thing that people worried about him was the injuries. The first 2 years of his career, he kept getting banged up. But last year, he hit played 162. This year, he's on pace for 151. So if he stays healthy the rest of this year, I think the injury concerns are kind of out the window. So, yeah, first round for me.
I don't know if I'd take him in the first round. I've been a big fan of his in the past. But I think he's easily a high second-round pick. I think he's a top 20 player if he continues to do what he's going forward. Would love to see him get a little bit more of those stolen bases. We all kind of salivated over him as a potential 30-30 guy when he was coming up through the minor leagues because he put together some pretty amazing seasons in double and triple A. But at this point, you got to just be grateful for the handful of steals he gets you and bank that power and the counting stats as well. So
I don't think I want him running, honestly, because most of his injury problems – The knee's been his bugaboo, basically. So I'd rather him just stay healthy. I don't care about the steals. I'll pick up cheap steals from somebody else.
All right. Let's talk about Sonny Gray, because he is a kind of a hot topic in terms of Major League Baseball. There's a report that came out today that the Brewers are actually doing background work on him because they are interested in purchasing or possibly picking up a starter or two at the deadline. He's most likely going to get moved. There's at least three or four or five teams who are interested in Sonny Gray. So, Scott, what are your thoughts on Sonny Gray for the rest of this season?
I'd love to see where he winds up. I was actually looking at some numbers around, surrounding him. I was taking a look. Yeah, I don't know if y'all go to BillJamesOnline.com at all, but I was taking a look at the team fielding numbers, and Oakland is dead last in the American League. So I think he'll get a bump, but how much of a bump will depend on where he ends up.
Eli, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, he's the kind of pitcher that mostly pitches to contact. So he needs, and he does get a decent amount of strikeouts, but he needs a good defense behind him. So yeah, that's very interesting. He's having a good year despite having such a bad defense behind him. But also at the same token, you worry a little bit about what kind of ballpark he goes to, although a move to the National League would be welcome. So I really like him, but, you always have to, again, you have to worry about injuries. He's been banged up the last couple of years, but, for the most part in his career, when he's been healthy, he's been a great source of whip, a decent source of strikeouts, and he's just a solid all-around pitcher. He seems to be back to form this year, and it's really encouraging.
Yeah, I'm still not buying him. I've been a Sonny Gray detractor for quite a while. I just don't see a ton of upside, even though he is striking out more guys than he traditionally does. I worry about the injuries that we saw last season. I worry about a move out of Oakland will destroy his minuscule home run rate. Right now, he's given up less than a homer per nine innings. I think that would go through the roof. And I think his BABIP, too, will, in spite of the fact that the defense behind him hasn't been good, I think his BABIP is due for some regression as well. So Gray is not a guy that I'm willing to purchase. I just don't believe. And I think depending on where he ends up, if he ends up in a nice park, well, then maybe he's worth a shot. But if he ends up in a place like, could you imagine him in Milwaukee? He'd get crushed.
A lot of the numbers are encouraging, though. I mean, people are swinging outside the zone more than they ever have.
Really low strand rate.
I don't know, but the contact rate's the lowest it's ever been. Swinging strike rate is the highest it's ever been.
His zone more percentage ball, is as low as more, it's ever been.
Yeah, more ground balls than he's ever got. I don't know. This is some things to be excited about, some things to worry will regress. But I think he's been just about as good as ever, so.
Yeah, and the ERA estimators all have him right around where he was back in 2014 and 15. So, I mean, there's reasons for optimism.
All right. Let's talk about Ian Happ. He's been kind of a little bit of a forgotten man in the rookie mix because of some of the really standout performances in Bellinger and Judge. But he's actually putting on a pretty good show and season so far. Eli, what are your thoughts on Ian Happ?
I really like Ian Happ. I think we talked about Michael Conforto about a month ago and how all he did in the minors was rake, but people didn't really get excited about him because he kind of moved quickly and he didn't have a huge track record, so people didn't, there wasn't a lot of buildup and excitement towards him necessarily, and that's the same thing with Happ. He was drafted, just a few years ago, but every level he's just raked. I mean, he's not a complete player, doesn't really steal bases, doesn't really walk a ton. But he's got some legit power. He's going to score a good amount of runs in this offense. The fact that he's doing this at the age, 22, and he's he just started hitting right away. It's really encouraging. I think it might be a good time to sell, though. Just it's going to be tough for him to keep up this power the rest of the way. He's going to be solid the rest of the year, and he's a great dynasty asset. But I think his value will probably go down a little bit in the second half. It's kind of hard to expect someone to just hit the whole year. He might hit a little bit of a rookie wall at some point.
Scott, what are your thoughts on Ian Happ?
I'd love to see where he ends up position-wise. I just don't – I mean, the Cubs, they seem like they're just kind of, you know, shuffling around darts on the board. You know, you got Ben Zobrist, you know, who should, you know, be the second baseman. But then again, you know, he hasn't hit much this year. So do you put Happ there? Do you keep putting him in center field? You know, if Schwarber continues to hit around 180, do you put him in left? But, you know, that flexibility is also something to consider, too, because that's something that, you know, most of those rookies, with the exception of Bellinger, really don't have.
Yeah, I mean, I think positional eligibility is always a really nice thing to have in fantasy. And so far, he's on pace to have at least second base and outfield eligibility coming into next year. He only needs three more games to hit the 20-game mark in most formats. I do think he may struggle at points throughout the season. I think he will kind of hit a rookie wall. He is striking out over 30% of the time, which is more acceptable nowadays than it has been in seasons and eras past. But I really like Ian Happ. I don't think enough people are kind of giving him credit. I mean, 12 home runs and 190 plate appearances, hitting .263, .330, .556. And, you know, he's slotted into the middle of the Cubs' pretty dynamic offense. I mean, you know, Ross Resource has him batting fourth. He's been batting in the middle for the majority of the season, or since he's, you know, at least for the last few weeks. And I just don't see any reason not to kind of keep banking on him, because it's not like they really want to continue to run out guys like Albert Almora and John Jay for some reason in center field. So I think there's a real good shot that he could actually play pretty much full time rest of the way. Let's go ahead and
I certainly agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, the key with him and the key with that offense, I mean, they just jumble that order around. And so you wonder, you know, how much of that plays with a rookie's head.
Yeah, he seems to be handling it fairly well, though. I mean, I'm going to go to his splits page real quick and see how much he's really getting jumbled. He's mostly batting second, fourth, and fifth, so for the most part. And he really is, he's only batted in the bottom half of the lineup, below, you know, sixth or below, six times throughout the season, in six games throughout the season. So I think they're going to keep him in the top half, and, you know, at least we're not seeing what Madden did to Addison Russell a few years back, where they keep batting him ninth.
Oh.
Let's talk about Rich Hill, because Rich Hill has been a guy who is he was a really, really big kind of I'd say a polarizing guy coming into the season. Some people really on the bandwagon, some people, myself included, not really willing to take the shot. So far, in just 61 innings, he's putting together pretty decent numbers. But Eli, what are your thoughts on Rich Hill?
This guy's just the weirdest player ever. I don't understand how he became like Cy Young at the age of like 36 all of a sudden of last year and this year. You still got to worry about injuries with him, but at the same time, he gets the pitch in the best ballpark in baseball. You can't really argue with the production these past few years. When he's on the mound, he's been fantastic. He gets a ton of strikeouts, has a pretty good whip. He's on a good team, so he's got to pick up some wins. He's had, I think, four straight great starts since coming back from the DL. It looks like the blister problem is a thing of the past. I'm sure I wouldn't be shocked if it creeped back up, but you know, he's a top like 30 guy right now when he's healthy. So I'm going to ride with him. And if he gets hurt, then so be it. You didn't really have to pay a big price to get him anyway. And there's a decent chance you picked him up off waivers at some point this year when someone got frustrated. So just ride him out and enjoy it while you can.
Scott, what are your thoughts on Rich Hill?
Yeah, that sounds like a winning plan. There's that equilibrium point where, you know, his value kind of in the price match. And I'm not sure where that is, because, I mean, I don't think he's ever pitched even 150 innings since, you know, what about since Clinton was president or something like that. But I mean, I agree, though, for 100 or 120 innings, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. So, you know, that's just a hard price to put on, you know, on a player.
Yeah, you just, for me, you just got to be okay with losing him at some point, because I just don't know how many innings. I mean, I've been a little bit surprised he's even gotten to 61 innings, considering how many DL stints and reduced starts he's had so far this year. So, I mean, if he gets another 61 innings, you're at least getting some pretty quality work. I mean, striking out over 10 per nine, his ERA is he's lowered his ERA back under 4, and it's at 3.69 at the moment. The real encouraging thing for me is the walks have gone down in the last three starts. He's only walked three people in the last three starts, and those were seven-inning starts each. He was struggling with walking, and, I mean, that may have had something to do with the blister issues. I just worry that the blister issues will crop back up at some point, because we're seeing them all over baseball. We're seeing with Marcus Stroman talking about the blister issues. We've had Aaron Sanchez deal with issues. Jarrell Cotton had blister issues. So, I mean, obviously there's a issue with the ball at this point. And a guy like Rich Hill, who's had these issues even preceding this, is probably more susceptible to it. But I think you just got to ride it out and enjoy the hot streak while it goes until he inevitably ends himself back up on the DL for something. Let's move on and talk about Domingo Santana. I think he has been a guy that hasn't been discussed a ton on this podcast and really within the industry this season, because I think most people have really talked about a lot of the other Brewers that have been having good or bad seasons. So, Scott, what are your thoughts on Domingo Santana?
Oh, I remember I lived down here in Houston. I remember when he first came up, and I think he struck out in something like 18 out of 21 plate appearances in his first year. But ever since then, when he's been healthy, he's produced. His biggest problem is staying on the field. But, you know, this year he's going to hit probably 20-plus home runs should he stay healthy. And, you know, his average seems to be up there. He's naturally a long guy. He's got, you know, long arms. And so, you know, that's going to create a lot of power. But he's going to strike out a fair amount. And that's just always going to be who he is. And as long as you're willing to live with that, I think, you know, he's perfectly good to be, you know, maybe a nice fourth or fifth fantasy outfielder at worst.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Santana?
Yeah, I'm falling in love with this guy. He's quickly becoming one of my favorite players. I mean, I think he's going to hit more than, I mean, he's going to hit more than 20 homers. 25 is, I'd be surprised if he didn't hit 25. He's walking at a great rate. He walked 11.5% last year, 12.5% this year. He slugged .485 in his minor league career. I think people forget that last year, in only half a season, he hit 11 homers, so this isn't exactly fluky. He was pretty damn good last year. Now he's even got 9 steals. I mean, that's a little surprising. I'm not sure that's going to continue necessarily, but it's a nice little bonus. I view this guy as like a rich man's Christian Yelich right now. I thought this was pretty much what Yelich would do, except maybe a little less homers than what Santana has. But, yeah, I love this guy. He's becoming an all-around guy, just on a pretty good offense. He's exciting.
Yeah, I think he's just under-talked about and underappreciated in the fantasy game right now. He's walking at his at a career-best 12.3%. He's striking out less. 26.8% is down almost 6% from last year. And he's hitting for power, and he's chipping in the speed. I know, Eli, you don't expect him to steal as many bags in the second half as he has in the first, but I think he gets somewhere close just because the Brewers are one of those teams that just don't care. They are just going to run. Like, they really don't care about efficiency that much. And it's not like he's been awfully efficient. He's 9 for 12 this year. So, especially much better than last year. We went 2 for 5. So I think they'll continue to let him run on the base paths. They're a team that likes to manufacture runs. So I really like Santana, and I think he's kind of one of those guys that people aren't paying enough attention to because of other big stories throughout the league. So I think he's one of those guys that you may be able to actually go out during trading season and buy for relatively cheap, comparatively speaking, to other guys putting up similar numbers. Let's talk about David Price, because I don't even know what to make of David Price right now at this point. He starts off the year on the DL because of the injury. I think a lot of people, including myself, didn't really give him any chance of pitching very much this season, and he's come back, and he was shaky kind of at first go, but last three starts he's put together three quality starts, struck out at least 5 and 9 in its most recent outing. So, Scott, what do you make of David Price?
I think there are a lot of people who are wary to start the season. He relies more on the fastball than any pitcher maybe in baseball. And, you know, there's nothing better than a good spotted fastball, and there's probably nothing worse than, you know, a fastball you can't spot. And so, you know, I wasn't surprised to see him get off to a slow start, but he's a guy that, you know, gee whiz, if you could pick him up, you know, as a waiver claimer, could have maybe a month ago, or, you know, maybe go out and get him in a trade. You know, if you catch an owner sleeping, you know, he'd be a really nice guy to have over the last 2 months of the season.
Eli, you're living in Boston. What do you say about David Price?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this guy's been a pillar of consistency. He's always been a stud. I mean, he's never been bad. He's been great for so long. Like you said, Justin, he's been a lot better the last handful of starts. I know it's been a little bit of a weird year with him. He started off injured, and then he had a couple blow-up starts and all this problems with the media. But it seems like a lot of this is behind him now. He seems to be mostly healthy. I know that he's got, like, a fingernail problem, but he's pitching through it. I think all that crazy stuff is over now. He's going to be back to – maybe he's not going to be the same David Price getting, like, you know, 12 strikeouts per nine, but he's still quite good. And, you know, even though this year has been so strange, he's still got a 4 ERA and a decent whip and almost a strikeout per inning. So it's not exactly been terrible. So, yeah, I'm all for David Price the rest of the year. I'm guessing he's going to have a really good second half.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think, one, I think he's gotten a little unlucky in the home run department. I think that'll come down a little bit. And the fact that he does rely on the fastball so much, I think maybe doesn't lead him to have to worry about these elbow issues cropping back up. Maybe so. I mean, there's always going to be a risk. You know, once you've injured that part of the body, you're more susceptible to you know, those kind of things cropping back up and being an issue. But I think he's a guy that you could probably go out and get somewhat cheaply, I think, just like Domingo Santana, though differently than Santana, because I think enough people were worried coming into the season that there's, you know, a little bit less shine on his name. I think there's still people waiting for the bottom to fall out and him to get hurt and miss the rest of the season. So I think Price is a guy who will pitch like a number two, number three starting pitcher that you may not have to pay two or three starting pitcher prices for the rest of the way.
I think if you're going to trade for him, you better do it now, because I think it's, you know, another good start here or there. People are going to realize, oh, shit, this is David Price. He's, you know, pretty good. So, yeah, I think you might be running out of time to get him now.
I completely agree with you. If he has another really dominant start, his price is going to start to skyrocket. He's only 31.
Yeah, and I think the key is fantasy owners really need to think three-dimensionally, and the dimension or four-dimensionally, the time element is what they don't think about. I mean, if you pick him up now, you get everything he's got from here until the rest of the season. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter whether he was 10-2 at this point or 2-10. It's what you get from here on forward, and I think, you know, the arrow's definitely pointed up.
All right. Let's talk about some waiver wire ads and some guys that are widely available in leagues. But maybe shouldn't be. Curtis Granderson has been really hot as of late with Conforto on the DL. He is definitely getting regular playing time, and more than likely the Mets are going to be looking to sell and moving some of their outfielders and maybe even Granderson out. And that, no matter where he lands or if they move Jay Bruce, that would be good for his playing time. So, Scott, are you buying Curtis Granderson?
Oh, it really depends on what you got in the outfield. I still don't like the batting average, you know, even that with the hot streak. I mean, he's up to 220, but, you know, in recent seasons, he's just not making as much contact. He's probably, you know, the bat speed is diminishing. He can get beat on fastballs. He doesn't, you know, bring the speed anymore. So, you know, he does bring power. And so, you know, he could get on that hot streak and help your team, but it's kind of one of those things you got to look at what else you got going in your outfield before you pull the trigger on that.
Eli, where are you at on Curtis Granderson?
He's 36. He's still fairly productive. I didn't quite realize over the last 2 years he averaged about like 93 runs, 30 homers almost. You know, he gets on base a decent amount. He walks a lot. So if you're in an LBP league, he certainly has significantly more value in those type of formats than he does in batting average leagues. But, yeah, I do worry about where he might get traded to. Maybe he won't get as much playing time if he gets moved. He could get hurt. He's old. He's fine. He's definitely like a good Band-Aid if you're struggling with outfield depth. You could do worse, but I prefer a better all-around player who hits for a little bit better average, scores more runs, steals more bases. But he's serviceable. He's better than people probably realize at this point.
I think he's the Band-Aid comment was the perfect kind of analogy for what Curtis Granderson is. You don't want him as a main fixture in your outfield necessarily, but he's the perfect guy if you've got guys on the DL for off days. I think he's a guy that could easily fill in and give you some needed power. In average leagues, he definitely takes a huge hit because his average is just absolutely atrocious. Running 236 this year, is 237 last year, in spite of the fact of the recent hot streak. So I think in 15 team leagues, I don't know if I'd roster him at 12 team league, but in 15 team leagues, I think he's a perfect fifth outfielder or bench bat. Where are you guys on Chris Devenenski? I was surprised. I looked over on ESPN.com, and I know they cater to 10 team leagues, and maybe people aren't as willing to roster relief pitchers that don't get saves. But he's also like a top 15 pitcher on the ESPN player rater. Why aren't people buying him, and would you buy him, Scott?
I think it all depends on the format you're playing in. I have a man crush on Chris Devenenski. He's just has a rubber arm, and he just mows hitters down. But I think where he's at is, I think, teams, especially with the Indians last year and Andrew Miller, I think managers are figuring out that the ninth inning may not be the most important inning, in most games. The problem is the fantasy game, maybe not hasn't gotten there, especially if you're playing in a standard 5x5 league. Now, if your league has holds, I'd be all over them in a minute. With saves, I don't think he's going to get the save opportunities. I think Giles has got that nailed down in Houston. But I still, would think about adding him, even if you don't get either of those, because he keeps throwing zeros. He keeps striking out guys. He throws multiple innings. So he's still valuable on that front.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Devenenski?
Well, before I get into my thoughts with Chris, I want to know about the cat in the background. I'm very curious about this.
That would be mine. They start going nuts about in the mid-afternoon. They think it's time to eat.
That is amazing. I love cats. Justin, how I feel about these kind of relievers. I'm obsessed with them. Every year I have like two or three guys like this on your roster. Honestly, if you have three Chris Devenenskis on your roster, I know that's not easy to do, but there are tons of relievers that are similar to him that get a ton of strikeouts and have great whips and all that. If you get three Devenenskis, that's like one Kershaw. And I just feel like people waste the last couple spots on their roster. There's always a couple guys on your team that, start every like fifth or sixth day, or, bench bats that only play like one or two days a week for you. I think that's a waste of a roster spot. If you have two or three guys like this, it honestly equals, like, if you multiply Devenenski times three, that's like 300 strikeouts and a whip under like 0.80 and a 2 ERA. And he's even got six wins. I know it's a little fluky, but a guy who pitches a lot of the high leverage situation is going to pick up wins. So I'm obsessed with this guy. I always own Betances. I know Betances has been a little disappointed this year, but I always own guys like this. Devenenski was a great last year in 100 innings, so this is no fluke. This guy's a stud, so I own him everywhere.
All right. Starting pitchers that are below him on the ESPN player rater: Michael Fulmer, Jacob DeGrom, Lance McCullers, Yu Darvish, Chris Archer. I know a lot of people don't want to roster these kind of guys, but they're actually like the perfect guys to roster, especially in shallower formats. And those are the formats in which these guys get completely ignored, because this is the guy who should be in your roster on your pitching staff every day, and then you should be rotating starters in. Like Eli said, if you've got two or three of these guys, you've got a stud pitcher on your roster that you paid absolutely nothing for. Like I said, I believe I'm going to double check exactly how much he's owned in ESPN. He's currently owned in 48% of leagues on ESPN, which means he's available in half your 10-team leagues, probably available in about 30% of your 12-team leagues. I mean, Devenenski is a guy that should be owned in every format. Especially if you're trying to catch up in the ratio categories right now, if you're behind, and I had a great conversation with Todd Zola on my radio show last night about it. Like, this is the time to go out and get a guy like Chris Devinsky. You won't have to pay very much for him in trade, and he can really, really help you out in the ratio categories. And ratio categories are a hell of a lot easier to climb at this point in the season than a lot of people give it credit for. So I'm going out and buying Chris Devinsky.
I feel like this is like the money ball of fantasy these days. Like, if you look at his first half, he pitched 51 innings, struck out 72, had a .77 whip and a 2 ERA and 6 wins. And that's about half a season. So that's, he basically gave you 7 elite starts with, I mean, so, you know, he's on pace for like 14 elite starts. And you didn't have to pay anything to get him. And it's not like he's like wasting a valuable roster spot. He's just like your last guy in your roster. I freaking love this guy.
Yeah, and I think the one thing we got to mention here is, and I think Andrew Miller is the only other guy I can think of that describes this, is that majority of his outings have been more than an inning. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're thinking about, well, gee, I really don't want to give a roster spot to middle reliever because I don't know if they're going to pitch, blah, blah, blah. Well, the thing is, he goes in there and he pitches 2 or 3 innings. You know he's not pitching the next day. You can go ahead and put him on your bench after he throws that 3-inning outing. And, you know, you'll be fine. He's not going to pitch. And you can put somebody else in that spot, you know, maybe who might be similar, you know, and has more nods to pitch. And so I really like that strategy of having 2 or 3 guys like that. And, you know, and he's different than your 8th or 7th inning reliever. You know, even like another guy in the Astros have, like, say, Will Harris. Will Harris never pitches more than an inning. And so, I mean, he's good, but it's a different kind of good. I mean, the fact that he can give you 2 or 3 innings, I mean, I have him in a total points league, and it's fantastic. I mean, he gives me 10-plus points every time he pitches.
And especially if you're in, like, one of those head-to-head leagues that have different slots for starting pitcher and relief pitcher, in the majority of formats, Devinsky has starting pitcher eligibility. So
absolutely.
That can be super helpful to get those relief pitchers who have starting pitcher eligibility. You know, another guy that is kind of a Devinsky light is Yusmeiro Petit, who's having a pretty good year himself. Through this point in the season, 2 wins, 53 strikeouts, a sub-3 ERA, and a 1 whip. So another guy that is going to be even cheaper than Devinsky that you can go out there and get one of those kind of supplements to your ratios. All right, let's talk about Tommy Pham, because, and we've talked about him a fair amount on this podcast, but he seems to continuously get underrated, and people still aren't really picking him up. He's got 10 home runs, 9 stolen bases, hitting .289, .377, .492 on the year. Eli, what are your thoughts on Tommy Pham?
Yeah, he's fine. I'm not Matt Taunton, so I'm not going to say that this guy is like the greatest hitter of all time. He's fine. He's like I said earlier with who was it? Granderson. Granderson's like a Band-Aid if you have an outfield problem. Pham's like the Band-Aid for the St. Louis Cardinals. So whoever's hurt at the time, Pham steps in, is pretty solid. I think he's a better real life player than a fantasy player. You know, fine. Ride him while he's hot right now. That's cool. But if you look at his track record, I mean, he's a fine player. He's not exactly. He used to run a lot. He doesn't really run much anymore. He runs a little bit. He used to have a lot of power back in the day. He's got some now. I think the 10 homers are a little bit fluky if you look at the last couple of years. Doesn't really drive in a lot of runs. Doesn't walk a ton. He's fine. Decent Band-Aid, like I said, but nothing special.
Scott, are you buying Tommy Pham?
As much as I would buy, say, you know, Stephen Piscotty a couple of years ago, Randall Grochek a couple of years ago. I mean, these guys in the Cardinals organization, they seem to be all interchangeable. They seem to develop, you know, quite a bit of, say, good talent. I don't know that they've really developed anybody that's a great talent, and that's probably why, you know, they've reached a ceiling as a team. And I say the same thing I said with Granderson. It kind of depends on what your outfield situation's looking like. I mean, if you want, you know, somebody on your bench who's, you know, a nice depth piece that you can put in when you got a guy that's out for a day or two, you know, that's fine. I don't know that I'd be putting him in my starting lineup.
Yeah, I think you can ride him while he's hot, and especially while Dexter Fowler is still on the DL. I worry that he's going to lose playing time once Fowler's on the DL because Grichuk has been okay. I mean, I think people are still a little bit overrating Grichuk, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Grichuk's been terrible.
He hasn't been terrible since coming back.
In general, he's been fucking terrible.
Well, yeah.
I never thought he was a good player anyway. I never thought he was good anyway, so.
I liked him when he first came up because he was really cheap and he was a nice power source, but at this day and age, the power isn't that, you know, power is plentiful. It's not as interesting as it was. I mean, and you can't really sustain a guy on your team who's hitting 220 with a 276 OBP.
Yeah, and last year, I know we're not really talking about Grichuk, but I just want to rant. I know he had 24 homers last year, but that came with a 289 OBP. So he never scores runs. He doesn't really steal. He never walks. He strikes out a lot. He's just so flawed. It's an empty power.
Yeah.
And you need more than 24 homers in a career year with an empty power guy. Sorry. He stinks.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting. You look at those guys, and it's where's their value most? Is their value most, you know, playing in your team, being mediocre, or is the value in, say, trading them? You know, before they get to that point, you know, being here in Houston, they're kind of at the same point with Derek Fisher. You know, do you put him out in left field, have him, you know, be, you know, good power, good speed, strike out a lot, or do you kind of keep holding him where he rakes in AAA and maybe flip him for that starting pitcher you need down the stretch? I mean, the Cardinals have kind of already sailed on that issue. They're not getting anything for those guys, and they're just kind of holding, you know, they're kind of holding a spot until something better comes along.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about I'm going to butcher this name, Adalberto Mejia. I think I got that one actually fairly decently. He's a
former impressed.
Yeah, former top Giants prospect that was traded to the Twins. He has been hot as of late. Do you buy it, Scott?
I looked at the numbers, you know, to make sure I could pronounce the names as well. You know, thank you for not making me do that. I don't like the FIP numbers. I think, you know, he's a good long-term piece. I just don't see him doing it this year full-time. When guys go through the league a second time, teams start to get a book on him. They start to figure him out. Then, you know, if he can readjust, then you can see if he makes it. I'm old enough to remember when guys like, you know, Maddox, Glavine, and Smoltz were coming up, and I hate to compare any young pitcher to those guys, but their first two or three years of their careers were brutal. And then they finally started figuring it out. And so when I look at young pitchers, I kind of look at it through that prism of, you know, unless they really start, you know, kicking butt when they first get here, I kind of expect them to struggle a little bit until they figure it out.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Mejia?
Yeah, I completely agree with Scott. Even though you said he has been good of late, but it's still been a little bit fluky. In his last three starts, he's had like 7 walks and like 12 strikeouts or something like that. In 12 starts this year, he's only had, I think, 3 quality starts. He's never struck out more than 6 in any game this year. I think, like Scott said, he's a better long-term piece. He's pretty solid. What he's doing at 24 is impressive, but I don't think I really want him this year. I'm more of a stream kind of guy against a crappy competition.
Yeah, I don't even know if I'd stream him against crappy competition, honestly. In spite of the fact he's pitched well as of late, like you said, I think it's been a little bit fluky. This is a guy with a bad fastball, and I'm not necessarily a big fan of bad fastball guys unless you have an elite pitch somewhere else, and he just doesn't. I mean, his curveball has been good. I wouldn't say it's near elite. And his changeup has been mediocre to bad. I don't believe that. That this guy is going long term to be able to develop an elite pitch that really gets him past that bad fastball. So for me, unless something changes with his arsenal, I can't buy in on Mejia. Let's talk about Stephen Vogt, because he kind of flamed out in Oakland. He was a lot of people's choice for kind of a low end catcher one or high end catcher two this year. Ended up getting DFA'd by the A's, and he was then promptly traded to Milwaukee, where he's been hot as of late. So, Eli, are you buying in on Stephen Vogt?
A little bit. I was really bummed that the White Sox actually didn't pick him up. I thought that would have been a great opportunity to pick up a decent catcher for the cheap. But, he's been pretty solid since coming with Milwaukee. I thought the A's kind of gave up on him a little too soon. He was, you know, been pretty good the last couple of years. I know this year was a struggle, but it seemed a little bit more fluky than anything. I wouldn't get too high on him, though, because he's kind of splitting time with Manny Pena. So it's not like he's playing every day. But, you know, if you're in a deeper league, I like Vogt. In a two-catch league, I like Vogt. If you got an injury with your main catcher, Vogt's a really solid option. He won't hurt you. I don't think so. Yeah, I'm all about him.
Scott, what are your thoughts on Stephen Vogt?
Yeah, you know, the A's just kind of they baffle me. There's kind of like a huge etch-a-sketch, you know, where, you know, you kind of draw bridges to nowhere and nothing seems to happen. You know, I think, you know, getting out of that organization, you know, might be a good thing for him. But I mean, he's a guy, he can produce for you 260, you know, maybe, you know, upwards of 8 or 9 home runs the rest of the way. And if that's something you need at your catching position, I say go for it.
I think most people would take that, especially considering how bad the catcher position has been this year. And I think the move to Miller Park is a fantastic move for him. I know he's split in time a little bit, but, you know, I think he's going to get the lion's share of the starts in Milwaukee rest of the way. I'd be kind of a little bit surprised if Pena continues to get the greater portion of that workload. I think Vogt is the better offensive player, and I think once the pitching staffs get a little bit more accustomed to Vogt, they'll start putting him in there. And it's a fantastic park for him. So I think he is definitely a guy to go out and buy right now, and I think he's probably pretty widely available in the majority of formats. But even if he's not, if someone's got him rostered, he's so far for the year, he's hit 7 home runs with a .225 average. It's not going to be too hard to pry him off of somebody, especially if they're not really in tune with how well he's been doing since coming over to Milwaukee. All right, let's finish out with Ricky Nolasco, who's, again, another guy on a hot streak. So, Scott, are you willing to pick up Ricky Nolasco?
I haven't on any of my teams. I can't speak for anybody else, but I really I don't really have much need for him. And you know, he pitched well last year. I mean, particularly towards the end, you know, after the trade, you know, from Minnesota. So, you know, who knows? Maybe this will stick. But I think too many people have been burned by Ricky Nolasco over the last decade. So I'm just going to keep away from him myself.
Eli, are you buying Ricky Nolasco?
Yeah, you can speak for me too, Scott. Yeah, I'm come on. It's Ricky Nolasco. He's every once in a while he throws together a good start, but come on. This is what we're talking about earlier. Like, put a guy like Davinsky on your roster. Get out of here with Nolasco. Yeah, every once in a while he could throw up a quality start, but you can't trust this guy. He's one of the least trustworthy pitchers I've ever seen in my life. And it's not like when he's good, he's like electric and you're getting like 9 strikeouts, you know, per 9. No, so no, sorry. And he's on a shit team. Get out of here.
Well, you can't put all good players on this section. And no, I wouldn't buy Ricky Nolasco either. I mean, good for him. His last two outings, he's pitched scoreless outings, struck out, you know, 12 guys in, what, 15 in a third inning. So nice little run for Nolasco. But you can't imagine it continues. Both FIP and XFIP are higher than his ERA, which is, you know, above average to begin with at a 4.42. He's getting real lucky in his strand rate. I think the BABIP numbers he's getting a little bit lucky there as well. So he's a guy who's been given up 2.08 homers per 9 this year. Not a guy I want on my roster. So, all right.
He's missing a letter in his first inning too. That bothers me.
He's missing a letter?
Yeah, it should be EY, not RICKY. That just bothers me.
All right. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. We're going to leave on that awkward note. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You guys don't agree with me on this?
No, not at all.
Whatever.
I've seen it both ways.
Scott, again, give yourself some plugs about your work over at the Fantasy Fix, and then tell people again where they can reach you on social media.
Oh, great, thank you. Yeah, at Esparzilla on Twitter. I usually go with a couple of series throughout the week. I've got my 3x3x3, you know, 3 guys to add, 3 guys to keep, 3 guys to drop. And then also, you know, I throw in just a weekly standard where I look at the best available guy at each position. That's, you know, guys owned by less than 50%, you know, of leagues out there. And so you can get those on a weekly basis at the Fantasy Fix.
Awesome. Eli, what are you working on? Where can people reach you?
And you can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB. And as usual, I'm working on jack shit.
And you can find me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read everything I write for baseball over on FanGraphs, where I write 4 to 5 times a week. You can hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and football season is coming, and so Eli isn't going to be doing jack shit for very long, because we're going to start pumping out football podcasts. We dropped our first one of the new season earlier this week, or late last week, and we're going to start pumping out 2 or 3 a week up and through the entire regular season. So definitely you'll be able to hear me and Eli and Mike and a number of new guys who are coming to the podcast. It should be a lot of fun. So definitely go search that out on iTunes and subscribe.
Whoa. Wait a minute. I got something I gotta have to be working on later. I just got a notification from DraftKings that Fantasy Women's Basketball is here.
Yeah. Oh.
So I'm going to be filling out my WNBA lineup tonight. So, I got to go.
Well, don't forget, CFL is here as well. So if you're itching for football, you can go gamble your DFS accounts away on Canadian football as well. And with that note, that's going to wrap us up. For Eli Scott, myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.